Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, we welcome YouTube channel host BTC Sessions. He is a great channel that walks people through how to use Bitcoin. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Very happy to be here and a big fan of what you're doing as well.
Thank you, sir. So let's talk about the newcomers. There's a lot of newcomers that are going to be entering the space thinking about, should I be invested in this asset? And if I should, should I be storing it myself? I hear all these things about self-custody. Let's start with the basics. Somebody comes to you and they say, hey, I want to get involved in Bitcoin. Are you sending them straight to an exchange? Are you sending them straight to a hard wallet resource? Where are you sending someone that asks you, should I be involved? And how do you deal with that self-custody versus not question at the beginning?
Yeah, that's a great question. And typically when somebody is getting started, I give them a very short list of things that they want to work towards learning about. And that list is, one, how are you going to obtain Bitcoin? Two, how do you use Bitcoin, like send and receive transactions? And three, how do you effectively secure Bitcoin? And if I give them those three things and then we examine those individually, that gets them off to a pretty good start. There's plenty of other rabbit holes you can go down, but I think that's a good place to start. And so when I talk about, well, where do you get Bitcoin? This can be a different answer for different types of people, because certain people have different skill levels, but also different concerns. And some people will want to be very, very private, and other people want, may not be as technically inclined and want like the easiest experience possible. And so usually for somebody that's relatively new, a little timid, what I'll do is I'll say, okay, well, we're going to get you a wallet on your phone. And we're going to get you on an exchange where you can buy some Bitcoin and send it right into your own custody. And again, this answer kind of evolves over time because there's always new tools. But there's a few phone wallets that I quite like right now. And the other wrench in my plan is, the US, there's been some wallets that have not been available or were available and are gone now. So it's always, you're trying to matrix your way through that. One wallet that I like for getting started for people right now is I quite like Aqua Wallet. I find it's cool because the way they break it down, they have a savings section and a spending section. And the savings section is like regular Bitcoin transactions on chain, that kind of thing. And then the savings section allows you to send and receive from either Lightning or Liquid Network wallets.
The spending section, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so anybody unfamiliar with that, Lightning and Liquid are just faster and cheaper ways to spend and use Bitcoin transactionally, whereas on-chain Bitcoin transactions, a little bit slower and at times can be more expensive. So I find that's a good beginner wallet to get started with. And it also lends itself to being able to withdraw from exchanges regardless of what, payment methods in Bitcoin they support.
With today's macro landscape, many people are worried that they are not saving enough for retirement. Now you can grow your retirement savings with a tax-advantaged Bitcoin IRA using Unchained. The Unchained IRA is the only solution that allows you to hold your own private keys in an IRA vehicle. Right now, Unchained is running an amazing deal for you guys where you can get started with their IRA for no setup fees and no fees for the first year. You can roll over traditional IRAs or other 401k accounts into this new Unchained IRA, and they can help you set up everything. Go to unchained.com/TBL and experience true ownership over your retirement. So let's talk about the process of getting, so you have an iPhone wallet or a smartphone wallet. Let's say we're using Aqua Wallet. And then are you telling them to, so I know from personal experience, the first time I used Bitcoin was sending it to myself. And I know that that is many people's first experiences. They buy it somewhere and they transfer it somewhere else, but the somewhere that they transferred it from is their account on an exchange, and the place that they send it to is themselves in whatever wallet situation. So how do you walk people through that? Do you encourage that, like send a transaction to yourself, getting used to it, tracking it on the blockchain? Everybody remembers their first experience waiting for a block to confirm using a block explorer. Do you preach that type of experience?
Yeah. So right away, yes. I think it's a good idea to become familiar with the idea of creating your own wallet and sending Bitcoin, like obtaining Bitcoin and sending it into your own custody. And I'd even go one extra step beyond that is after that first purchase, and with some skin in the game, practicing deleting and recovering the wallet.
I was going to suggest that you got to delete the wallet and prove to yourself that this is real. This is, try to delete it on one phone and install it on another to even prove to yourself that it can be done, but go ahead.
Exactly. And so if you've never done that before, and then you accidentally delete an app, you're sweating. You're so worried. Oh God, did I lose this money and everything? And you will a little bit the first time be sweating when you do it, even though you know you're about to do it. But once you've been through that process, then your confidence level goes up quite a bit and you go, okay, I see how this works. And you're right. You know, maybe installing an app on another phone where you can see the same balance, or on a computer where you can see the same balance, that aha moment of, oh, these words actually give me access to the money wherever I am. And so that gets over one of those learning hurdles for people right away. Self-custody, how important are these words? And furthermore, that if somebody sees those words, they have full access to your money. That really, really helps out the gate.
Are hard wallets for everyone, or is that a case-by-case basis?
So I think it's a good idea to strive towards that. And I tend to say it's okay, obviously, having phone wallets. They're great for kind of day-to-day use and up to a certain threshold. But everybody's going to have a certain threshold where they think to themselves, I wouldn't be comfortable walking around with this as cash in my pocket. And that's kind of the threshold that I guide people to is, you know, if you start thinking about having this as just like a bunch of 20s and 100s in your pocket, at what amount would you start feeling uncomfortable? Because that's when you should start looking into and kind of understanding how hardware can help you with security in that realm. I think it's an attainable goal for most people. I'd say if you're capable of using a smartphone and downloading apps, and you're, say, responsible enough to have a passport or a child, like if you have kids and you can keep your kids alive and take care of them and not lose them, you know, you're already responsible for very, very important things. You can be responsible for your own money.
And so keep it where you keep your passport is one of the suggestions that, you know, you're implying here. But let's talk about the challenge of where to keep your hardware wallet and to do single sig or multi-sig. At the Bitcoin layer, we're sponsored by Unchained, who has a multi-sig offering. And, you know, The advantage of multi-sig is that you can create a community around this money if that is something that appeals to you as someone with a family potentially. So just talk about where to keep these devices and what may be some of the advantages to not having a single key setup are.
Yeah. So I guess I'll kind of go down that pathway. So of course, you know, a hardware device, the advantage over, you know, just a wallet on your phone is that the keys to your money are stored on a device that is entirely offline. However, you have a backup to that device. It's written as 12 or 24 words. And if somebody were to stumble across that information, or you didn't store it safely, and maybe you don't want a digital copy of it, but if somebody made a mistake and took a picture of it, or again, if worst case scenario, somebody kicked open your door and physically coerced you into giving up that information, you know, those words are a single point of failure in a single SIG setup. And so that means that with a copy of that information, the information is the keys to your money and gives anybody with that full access. And so in a multi-sig situation, you can kind of think of it like you have a digital vault that has multiple keyholes, and you need a threshold of those keys in order to open the vault and remove money. And those keys can be distributed in different geographic locations. And so what that practically does is, if somebody comes across one of those keys or physically coerces you into giving up one of those keys, well, they don't have enough information to open the vault. And oftentimes, there's no indication that that key is part of a larger vault. You can even use it as a decoy and have it as a single SIG with like $1,000 in it, and say, well, that's it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. That's what's in the wallet. So not only does it give you security against single points of failure and fault tolerance if you start losing things, but it also gives you plausible deniability in that there's no definitive proof in some cases that it's even part of a multi-sig. So it's kind of like this, you know, it solves for multiple things.
Who are some of the people that have guided you, or that guided you earlier in your Bitcoin journey as you were trying to, I guess, find your niche, right? So everyone has their way that they feel that they contribute to this community. I do it personally through my background in the traditional financial sphere, because I bring knowledge of a multi-trillion dollar world and use that as context for Bitcoin. You obviously went your own direction. So what was the origin of that direction? Tell me about your background and who inspired you to start teaching about some of these things.
Yeah. So my path to kind of becoming an educator and around the practical hands-on stuff, it actually came from trying to scratch my own itch, because when I got into Bitcoin, I started exploring it. And back when I started, I'm a pretty visual learner, and I was looking for where can I find YouTube videos on how to do this. And this was circa 2014, and there were none. There were zero YouTube instructional videos on it. And most of the guidance that I got was, oh, go to this talk forum and scroll halfway down through the comments, and some dude made a bullet point list of how to do it. And I was thinking, oh my God, I do not learn this way. This is going to be horrible. And it was. For 2 years, I tore my hair out trying to figure out how to use this stuff. And a lot of it was just straight up trial and error. And so after a couple years of going through that, you know, I had some experience with basic video editing. I had, you know, I used to teach little kids how to break dance for like a decade. So I had, while it wasn't in the tech realm, I had the experience of teaching complex movements to small kids. And so like being able to break down things very granularly. And so I kind of combined those two things and just, I said, somebody's going to find this useful eventually. So I started making step-by-step videos of, okay, well, here's how you use a wallet and how you recover it. Here's a hardware device. Here's, you know, back in the day, one of my first videos was how to use a Bitcoin ATM. And so I just started hitting different topics that I had struggled with myself. And I started making a tutorial every single week. And so the channel now has been running for 8.5 years of consistent weekly video tutorials on Bitcoin stuff. And yeah, so from the educational, like hands-on point of view, it was just, again, me continually screwing up and then learning how to do it right, and then showing people where I made mistakes and how to fix them. And then from the some of the people that I really look up to and appreciate guiding me in my understanding of why Bitcoin specifically, of course, Saif Edeen, reading his book on the Bitcoin Standard and his subsequent books, really helped kind of form the way I think about Bitcoin. Also, Francis Pouliot, I did some work with him early on, and a lot of the lessons that I learned from him just through osmosis have really stuck with me in how I think about Bitcoin. And so he was very educational for me. Dave Bradley, who has done work with a couple of different Bitcoin companies that I've been involved with in the past, helped a lot. And then a YouTuber that used to do regular shows, his name is Vortex, and he was foundational to my understanding of Bitcoin as well. So all of those and plenty more really contributed to my understanding of Bitcoin as a whole. And then I just kind of tinkered and figured out the tools gradually on my own.
Special shout out to Vortex. He was one of the first people who I also watched, and it was one of the first people who disseminated my time value of Bitcoin piece that I wrote in 2018 and helped get it out there into the universe, which was really cool. And I'm always thankful for that. And we didn't know the strong connection between breakdancing and Bitcoin education, but here we are. And it does make sense when you have to teach, you take things from that. I bring aspects from the classroom at USC Marshall School of Business to the YouTube channel. And I, you know, whatever you can use to help educate, all that is really important. Now, you said that you have some really cool Bitcoin tools that you're into these days. Let's talk about some of those.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of stuff that I use day to day, and there's some stuff that, you know, we've talked about Aqua Wallet. That's something that has kind of come to fruition this year, that I really enjoy using. In the realm of hardware, I use a lot of different things, but, a couple of my most used things, I really like using tap signers. So a tap signer is basically, it's a hardware device for an additional layer of security that is ideal to use with your phone. And so where I use this the most is, you know, I travel a lot, I go to conferences, things like that. And, you know, I live on Bitcoin. So I transactionally use it quite a bit. And so oftentimes if I'm going somewhere, I'll have enough where I can like go and visit the trade room floor and buy things at the booths and stuff. But I don't necessarily want to have that all sitting in a hot wallet. That scares me a bit. So a tap signer basically allows you to see and add to your balance on your phone. But then when you want to spend, it requires you to, one, put in a PIN that is specific to your card. And then two, tap that card to the back of your phone to get an NFC signature to approve the transaction. So functionally speaking, it allows you to have peace of mind. So if somebody steals your phone, they can't spend your Bitcoin. If somebody steals the card, they still can't spend your Bitcoin because they don't have the PIN. So it just gives you these layers of security when you're on the go. And it's also a pretty friendly beginner hardware device that's affordable before you maybe move on to something a little bit more robust. So that's something that I really like. My daily driver for hardware is the Cold Card Q now. So that's that also came out within the last calendar year. I really like it. You know, it has taken my transactional, I'd use it for my kind of monthly cash flow. And the way that I have it set up is kind of cool. I like Sparrow Wallet on my desktop. And so what I'll do is I'll have Sparrow Wallet up, and I'll set up my transaction and say, I want to send this much Bitcoin to this address. And then with the Cold Card, you don't have to plug it in, but I also no longer have to deal with SD cards. And so what I'll do is it has a little camera on the top. So I'll scan a QR code in Sparrow Wallet. Then my Cold Card says, hey, it looks like you want to spend this. Do you approve it? And I say yes. And as soon as I do, it brings up something on the screen that says NFC. And I can take any phone. It doesn't have to be mine. It doesn't have to have a Bitcoin wallet on it. I just tap it to the Cold Card. And it'll say, do you want to open up your browser? And if you say yes, it'll open up mempool.space and broadcast your transaction right away, which is super cool. So that's kind of how I'm using my cold card. I really like it. If that sounds scary as hell to you, you can also just plug it into a computer. But I like it. I think it's kind of neat.
Well, and no, people need to understand here that this is an introduction to a channel of a Bitcoin educator who has hundreds and hundreds of videos for all levels, right? There's going to be the pure beginner, there's going to be the advanced, and there's going to be everyone in the middle. And nobody's Bitcoin storage solution is going to be the same. I think that itself is scary to people, that they don't know. Like, if you want a bank account, you just go to a bank, you don't even have to go anymore. You just submit your information online. You have a bank account, you can use it. Nobody really even needs to step into a branch again. And they can, you know, a debit card shows up in the mail, a credit card can be linked digitally. And people just have this experience with money that they're comfortable with. And Bitcoin doesn't have the uniformity, so it doesn't bring the comfort. And so these things might scare people, but just go check out his channel. And watch the beginner videos if you really don't want to deal with a desktop wallet, a signing device, a tap device, you know, broadcasting to the mempool without actually having the internet on the device with the private keys itself, which a smartphone does and a hardware wallet, you know, probably doesn't. So keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. No, again, like, if you begin listening and at a certain point it begins to sound like Greek, that's okay, because every person will be at a different point in their journey. So the stuff that I'm talking about, all of this is for no one, but some of this is for everyone. So find the spot that you're at and then start there. So yeah, anyways, I digress. I'll just point at a couple other cool things.
Do you have any hardware wallets that you don't have to recommend? I know that everyone has their own arrangements and things like that, but are there any hardware wallets that you would, you know, tell people that you got to stay away from this, or, hey, I've used this in the past and it's acceptable, or anything else that you can share there?
Yeah. So, something that I've kind of really moved away from as of late. And it's one that a lot of, and I'm not trying to throw shade or anything here, but a lot of people kind of got started with Ledger because they're one of the longest running hardware devices out there. And I'm going to caveat this by saying, you know, I don't think that they're intentionally malicious, but just the direction that they've gone is not a direction that I'm, you know, personally in line with. And so I've moved away from them. You know, I like devices that are either Bitcoin only or offer a Bitcoin only firmware option. And the reason for that is with more complexity comes more attack vectors. So the more kind of focused that they are, I think the more secure. And on top of that, there's an opportunity cost when you're trying to support every single coin under the sun. Then oftentimes you won't be putting the man hours into making sure that the support for the latest and greatest in Bitcoin, in the Bitcoin experience is going to be supported. So there's that. There were, you know, not great customer privacy guarantees. There's been leaks and stuff, and people are still getting spam messages and phishing emails and stuff from customer data leaks, which can happen to various companies, but it just didn't look great. And then they had like an upload your key to the cloud feature recently that I thought was a huge misstep. And, you know, there was nuance to that, but the crux of it kind of came down to people started asking, how do I know that this isn't already active on my device, even though I haven't opted into it? And the answer is you don't, because it's not open source and nobody can really check. So, because of that, I've definitely moved away from kind of using Ledger or recommending it. I think there's other options that people can go with, but, you know, some people still like it and that's up to them. But it's not something that I go towards.
Hey, keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. So, now, okay. So this is something that down the line people may be interested in, which is running a Bitcoin node. And so that's basically just having a copy of the entire history of Bitcoin's transactions of the ledger, the entire history from the beginning, as well as basically the rules that govern the network. And so I guess the key point that I want to point out here is when you're using a Bitcoin wallet, if you don't have your own node and you're not pointing your wallet towards it, you're basically using somebody else's Bitcoin node. So in a way, you are trusting them to give you the right information. I'm not saying that you're going to necessarily be fed wrong information. I don't think I've heard of that happening with popular wallets or anything like that. But there's also a privacy element to it as well, because what you're effectively doing, it's kind of like tapping somebody on the shoulder and saying, hey, can you check all of these wallet addresses and balances for me? And so they do that, and then they may have like the IP address of the person that checked. And so there's a security benefit to running your own, or a privacy benefit to running your own node. And so I really like Start9. I think that what they're doing is really, really cool. So I've previously used Umbral. That's another popular one, but I've kind of gravitated towards Start9 over time. And it's basically like you can run nodes for free on your own laptop and everything. Some of these plug and play options give you a whole bunch of additional Bitcoin related apps that you can kind of work together. And the way that the devices work is you plug it into the wall, you plug it into your router, and then you can access it from any device, phone, iPad, laptop on your home network and manage it from there. So, kind of like a fun, you know, eventual thing to aspire to, I think is worth looking at. And then my number one thing that I'm just enthralled with this past little bit is in and around running your own Lightning node, which previously has been an absolute nightmare. I'm going to be honest. It's not like a fun endeavor for the average person to try and host their own Lightning node on their own hardware. But recently, something called AlbiHub came out. And so AlbiHub, you can run on if you have a Start9 node, or if you have an Umbral node, or if you want, you can use their cloud hosting service. And it allows you to set up your own Lightning node. And it actually, for once, walks you through the steps. It says, hey, maybe first you should do this, and then let's connect your mobile wallet. And so previously, I've tried doing this on my own to a moderate degree of success, but oftentimes you're using Tor and you're doing all these different things and it's a pain in the butt to connect remotely. But this, I just open up a wallet on my phone. In 2 seconds, it loads. It sees my Lightning node and my balance, and I can send and receive Lightning transactions super quick. And I have my own Lightning address. So I have like BTC sessions at getalbi.com, but it goes to my own Bitcoin node at home. And so it's just like, while not everybody's going to do this, I see this and I go, oh my Lord, the amount of progress that has been made in this realm in the past couple of years is staggering. And your average person is going to look at this and say, that's still hard. But I see the trajectory and it gets me very, very excited. So I love it.
You know, people ask me often, Nick, you must be running your own Lightning node and generating yield per your own article in 2018. And I tell them, honestly, I'm like, do you want me to write or you want me to run a Lightning node? Like, which one do you want? Because you're not going to get both. And it's not that I'm being disingenuous. It's that I don't have the technical skill and time to generate yield for myself in a Lightning routing environment. It's not what I'm focused on. So, but it's great to hear that there are these advanced tools now that help us run a node and even get closer to having our own capital dedicated to assisting the network route transactions. So do you have any experience with the routing aspect and generating fee income?
So I tried my hand at that early on with one of my first Lightning nodes, but I also didn't really know what I was doing. Again, it was like nobody did. Yeah, exactly. And so nobody had really,
except Alex Bosworth.
Yeah. And he nailed it, obviously. But my problem was I went and I did a tutorial on how to make your own Lightning node. And then I said, all right, here's my connection info. So if you want to open a Lightning channel to me, then go ahead. And then I got to a point where I was like, why the hell can't I spend out of my Lightning node? What is going on? I have like a stupid amount of channels. There must be 200 channels here. And I'm trying to figure it out. And then every time I opened a Lightning channel that like went out to a bigger node, it would drain in 20 minutes. And then, but I'm looking and I'm like, I have all these channels. I have liquidity on my side of the channels. What is going on? And I started looking, and all of these people that opened Lightning channels to me, I was their only Lightning channel. So they basically had a line straight to me, and whatever outbound channels I had, they'd just drain instantly. And then I'm stuck with all of this liquidity on my side with nowhere to go unless I wanted to pay the person that made the channel. And so I ended up having to just close everything and start from scratch. So lesson learned, don't do that. And so my answer to your question is I was horrible at that. And now I've tailored it to what I need to do, which is I live on Bitcoin. I invoice in Bitcoin. So I just need inbound liquidity to collect payments and then to either be able to swap that to on-chain for savings or to be able to just pay with day-to-day payments using AlbiHub. So yeah, that's where I'm at now.
And what's your personal experience with Lightning adoption versus having to use on chain? Is there a dollar threshold? Personally, in my experience, I feel like anything below $200 or so is almost automatically going to be a Lightning transaction if the other person is a Bitcoiner. And then beyond that, maybe on chain. So what is your experience? How often are you using Lightning versus otherwise?
I would echo that where, lower value, sub couple hundred dollar transactions, easily Lightning tends to be the default. Every once in a while, I'll see transactions in that realm that are on chain, but not super often. And I even use things like Aqua Wallet that allow you to receive on chain and it'll swap it for you into the spending wallet so that you can use it for Lightning right away. I'll often do that if I know somebody's sending on chain in a smaller capacity. Anything north of, a few $100, something like that, I'll often be receiving on chain still. But that's obviously going to change over time as fees adjust. And, we've seen big spikes, but we've also seen like a relative period of calm recently where fees have been quite low. I don't know how long that is going to last. I think things can get a little bit crazy in bull runs. But the nice thing is I feel prepared for that. And even if somebody isn't prepared for that, there are wallets that will allow them to transactionally be economically viable and then build their way towards more and more self-sovereignty as they build a balance. So that's kind of where I see things going too.
Any other slides for us?
The other thing that I really wanted to touch on is, as I said, I accept, Bitcoin. I've been earning Bitcoin and living primarily on Bitcoin for 4 years. And so if you are a Bitcoiner and you want to accept Bitcoin payments, there's kind of two big ones that I really like right now. That would be BTC Pay Server and Zaprite. So BTC Pay Server, it's open source, private, you can self-host it, all of that. It's great. And I'm actually currently working on a revamp of the tutorial on BTC Pay Server that I did a couple of years ago. So I'll have that out pretty soon. And it's awesome. But some people need a lighter weight, quicker, just kind of like good to go solution. And Zaprite, in my opinion, is that. And so this is like Parker Lewis and Will and John, they're all working on Zaprite and they're awesome. And it's not custodial. So like when you set up Zaprite, you link it to your own on-chain wallet, your own Lightning wallet. And the cool thing about Zaprite is you can also do fiat payments. So when you have a regular business that is still primarily accepting fiat, you can plug in those payment rails, but then have Bitcoin side by side with it. And one of my favorite things about it is what I've started doing is I don't like getting fiat. I want Bitcoin. I want people to pay me in Bitcoin. you can put a premium on fiat payments, which to me communicates, if you want to pay me with worse money, I'm going to charge you extra, which I love doing. And I started with 10% and people kept paying me in dollars. So if somebody wants to pay me in dollars, I charge a 20% premium now.
Love it. Living on a Bitcoin standard, these are some of the things that you have to do to get by. BTC Sessions, we appreciate you so much sharing your expertise. For all the episodes that you've done, inspire people like me to just put what we have out there for the world. And you know, one of the reasons that I came to YouTube is because I loved teaching in the classroom, but I wanted to reach more people. And this is the way that we can do it. So thanks for your efforts. And please tell people where they can find your channel.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me. I really do appreciate it. You can find me on YouTube. Just search BTC Sessions. There's plenty of content there. I do have a website, btcsessions.ca, with some resources there. And then finally, the last thing I'll say is if the tutorials are not quite scratching the itch and you need a little bit more kind of one-on-one, I also do have a company called Bitcoin Mentor. You can find them at bitcoinmentor.io. And we've got like a team of educators that also do one-on-ones with people too.
Last question. Where should people go to buy Bitcoin in Canada?
Ooh, so I really love, it's actually he's a good friend of mine that I've known since back in 2015. His name is Adam O'Brien and he runs Bitcoin Well. And so you can sign up in a few minutes and you can send an Interac e-transfer and it goes instant self-custody to your own wallet. They also do Lightning. And then you can also buy without requiring ID. They have a mechanism where you can go through their Bitcoin ATMs and have it go directly to Lightning or whatever. And as long as it's sub $1,000, then you don't require any sort of identification or anything.
Wonderful. Well, for our friends north of the border, where you can buy Bitcoin in Canada, BTC Sessions, again, thank you for joining us and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, Nick.